anyone wants to go there, what that means. Any event, let's start on the halacha kuf samach zay mishaba al eshes ish imbo lishal heach yase teshuvah. A man, Rachmanu Litzlan, did a terrible avera. He had relations with a married woman. And he comes now to Beis Din, he asks them, what should I do to save my soul? What should I do? O im ba al oisam shechayiv kares. Or he has relations with a woman for which he is chayiv kares. That can be incest. Or it can be any type of situation, an eshes ish, a married woman, or any of his relatives. What other situation there for kares? A nida of man has relations with his wife and she is a nida, he's chayiv kares. So what should he do? So here, right away, the Sefer Chasidim says, the first thing we have to know is this a sin which is a me'uvos she'eino yachol liska? In other words, did he have a child with this woman? And the child is a mamzer. So what are you going to do? There's really no, we discussed last week at length, is there a solution to a metaher, a mamzer? So we only discuss the situation where it's an eshes ish, where a married woman. So we discussed techniques that can be done to be metaher a mamzer. But let us say, Rachmanu Litzlan, he has relations with a relative, okay? Then there's nothing that can be done. There is no retroactive nullification of the marriage. That's impossible. The other technique is possible, but let's just take it at face value what he says over here. So right away he says, Mesim Chiluk Mosai. We first must establish a difference when Me'uvos, it is an error, it is a mistake, it is a crime in the category of Lo Yuchal Liskayin versus Mosai Yayil Teshuvah. There are some types of sins which there is a solution. There are certain sins where there is no solution. And from those, okay, there seems to be repetition. I'm not reading it right, obviously. It will not help? In general. Okay.
It's Shuvah, but you have to do it.
So Mosai Yoil Teshuva Ume Oisan Shemoil Lohem Teshuva for him and general. Okay, let's read a little bit further. Vyamru Chayove Kresos Kirisos. Okay, I'm surprised it's Kiresois. Really the correct way to say the word appears Kiresois. Shalaku Nifteru Mide Kirisosan. This goes into a whole new fascinating topic. What?
No, it is correct.
Kirisos?
Yeah.
Mesechta kureisos, kureisos.
This isn't plural.
Chayove. Chayove means.
People who are high in one kureis.
Chayove kureisos. Okay. Okay, fine, okay. Chayove kureisos. Shalaku shniftu midei kureisos. There is a very important halacha, which was the source of a controversy not that long ago, to reinstitute smicha in Klal Yisrael. There's a halacha that a person, Rachmana Litzlan, is chayiv kares, if he gets malkois arboim, that saves his soul. He's potter from kares. Now, what exactly is kares? This is a very complicated topic. Those who are learning daf yomi, it's the next mesechta. Okay, the next mesechta, so you fasten your seatbelts, the next mesechta discusses what is kares? There's something called kares, and there's something called nisa bidei shomayim. What is the difference between the two? Good luck. Okay, it's not exactly so simple. There are many different opinions. Pretty much, I'm not going to go there. Okay, let's just leave that alone for now. It's not, obviously, it's not very pleasant. Whatever it is, Does it mean in this world? Does it mean in the next world? Does it mean in both worlds? Does it mean that a person has to be under the age of 60 in order for there to be kares? Once a person passed 60, it's not possible for there to be kares. Is it the year 60? Maybe it's 50. Maybe it's 70. The Gemara says the story where Rabbi Yossi, I think it was Rabbi Yossi, he made a party when he reached the age of 60. He said, "I am now no longer. It's no longer possible for me to be chayiv kares in this world." There can be other punishments, misa bidei shamayim, there's kares in the next world, but the type of kares that exists in this world, once a person gets past the age of 60, then he is past that stage. Okay, so these are all very complicated things. There's also a whole topic of discussion if a family wants to name a child, a baby, after a relative who died young. And the question is, the person, let us say, you know, he died young today. What's called young? Anything under 100 years old today, we call young. Baruch Hashem.
The man okay. Lived under 60.
So the question is it a bad mazel? People, not everyone is sensitive to these issues, but those who are sensitive to these issues, and they do not want to name a child after someone who died relatively young, and they're afraid that the mazel of the niftar will have an effect on the child, and the child may also, Rachmana Litzlan, suffer and die young. So this not everyone is sensitive to these things. There's some people don't even ask the question, but there are people who do ask the question. And the Rabbanim will tell them that if the person lived past 60, there's nothing to discuss. Then there's no issue whatsoever. Yeah? The great-grandfather, not necessarily after they had in mind, not the person who died young, but the person who died young was named after a grandfather who was 100 years old. So it's indirect, and it's true. Also, in the Holocaust, the Kedoshim, it's not necessarily there a matter of mazel. This was a tzar for Klal Yisrael. There are many, many approaches to these things. These are very mystical things, and there are many different opinions, and we don't pay attention to this. But people who are sensitive and it bothers them, and they do want to be machmir. So one thing that a Rav will tell a person is, well, if the person lived past the age of 60, then there's nothing to discuss. Then you can name a child after that person without any daigo whatsoever. There's really nothing to discuss, period. Yeah.
I'm just curious, is there a swear to say that you should name somebody who died young? You have to rule, they died young, they didn't reach their life, maybe through this child they will.
There's a swear to say like this, a swear to say like that. Absolutely, many people don't even ask these questions. They do whatever they want, and because good, there's a rule. If you know, it's like asbestos. If anyone has asbestos in their basement on their pipes, and you want to have it removed, they'll tell you, if you don't bother it, it won't bother you. Unless you're selling your house and you got to get rid of it, don't bother it. It's not going to bother you. When it comes to mazel, all of these mystical type of things, if you're not makbid on these inyanim, it's not going to be makbid with you. If it doesn't bother you that this person had the name is from a person who Rachmana Litzlan had a problem in his life, it doesn't register with you, then don't worry. The problem will not register with you. If it bothers you and you anyway proceed, then you're waking up a sleeping beast. Yeah.
Also, people add another name.
Yeah, another name. It's another issue. And then there's another question. Where do you hear the name? Do you hear the name before or do you hear the name after? That's also a very big issue. Let's say the person indeed, let's say he died young, and you want to give that person a name, and so you add a name. There's also a very big, significant dilemma: should you add the extra name after the name, or should you add the name before the name? Okay, everyone yesh v'yesh. Everyone is a different minigun. Let's not even go there. The point over here is that once a person passed the age of 60, then there's no issue whatsoever because that's past the age of kares. Even though we really don't know what kares really is, it's really you can't say Rachmana Litzlan, a person who dies under the age of 60, you're going to say that he died of kares. You got to be out of your mind. You got to really be put into a mental institution to say such a thing today by any person who dies under the age of 60. Because no one knows what this means. No one has any clue to the way all these matters work. We have emuna, not do averis. Averis bring karis. And there's something in Shemayim called karis. How does that affect a person in this world? We have no idea. However, there is a principle called a person who is chayef. Every time a person does an avera, for which he is chayef karis, he is also chayef aloisasev malkois arboim 40 lashes. If he is warned by Bezdin not to do an avera, that he is chayef karis, and does not listen and does the avera, Bezdin has an obligation to give him malkois arboim for the loisase, for the violation of a negative commandment. If Bezdin succeeds in giving him lashes for the violation of the loisase, Chazal tell us, he is exempt from the severe punishment called karis. Now, go back years ago, I don't have the exact dates, but this was a very big issue. There were many people that converted because of the anusim, due to enormous pressure to Christianity. And they were not able to be oimed in the nisayon of giving up their life for kiddushim shemayim, and they converted, and then they had charata, and they were choizer b'shuva, and they desperately wanted that to volunteer to receive malkois arboim, to receive lashes, to volunteer. There were no witnesses. There was no hasra. But there is such a principle to volunteer to receive malkois in order to cleanse their neshama from karis. To do that, you need a bezdin. And a bezdin has to be convened by talmidei chachamim who have smicha. And today, and smicha is last week's parsha, vayismoich Moshe es yodov al Yoshua. Moshe did give smicha to Yeshua, and Yeshua in turn gave smicha to his talmidim, v'chulu v'chulu. That smicha came to an end, to do in Golos. Okay, that time of the Asura, ha'arugei malchus, smicha came to an end. The Rambam says an incredible chiddush, and it's not really clear where the Rambam gets this from. The Rambam says that you can reinstitute smicha if all of the talmidei chacham of the world come together and agree there's one person that is eligible to receive smicha. So in Tzfas, okay, I don't remember all the details, I didn't prepare for this, but in Tzfas there were many people who are rachmana l'tzlan were nichshol in averos due to the difficulties of galus, and they very much wanted malchus to cleanse their neshamas, and there was a very big demand on helping them. And all of the Talmidei Chachamim in Tzfas agreed, if I'm not mistaken, to give smicha to the Mari ben Chaviv? Okay, one of the Gedolei Yisrael living in Tzfas at the time of the Beis Yosef. Okay, the time when Shulchan Aruch was written in the late 17th century, the early 18th century, and they convened and they all were masking to give smicha to one person, and he in turn gave smicha, I believe, to the Beis Yosef. And the Beis Yosef to others in order to convene the Bezdin so they can give Malkus. It almost worked. Problem was, they left out Talmidei Chachamim in Yerushalayim. Okay, they thought in Tzfas that was the new center of Yiddishkeit, and later people that live in Yerushalayim made a macha, they issued a protest. You know, the world doesn't start and begin in Tzfas. There are other parts of the world where there are Talmidei Chachamim, and it's not valid, according to the Rambam, unless everyone is represented. So the whole thing fell apart. Okay, the whole thing fell apart, but it came pretty close. And this is the Chiddush of the Rambam, exactly to fulfill what it says here in Sefer Chasidim, anyone, Rachmana Litzlan, that is Chayiv Kares, if he gets Malkois, he cleanses his neshama from Kares. And you should know this, there's a minig, it's not a real Malkos, but there's a minig done twice. We don't see this maybe today, they still live more. We live today in the global village where everything is posted on social media. So you can find today all the old minhagim are coming to life due to the advances of technology, and that is Erev Yom Kippur. Erev Yom Kippur, there are some kihilos where you lie down on the floor in the mikvah, yeah, could be. You lie down in shul. In shul after davening, Erev Yom Kippur, and the Shamas takes out a whip. He takes out a whip, or he takes off his belt, and he gives you, he whips you symbolically. He doesn't do it too hard, obviously, but he gives you a symbolic malchus in order to cleanse your neshama, Erev Yom Kippur, from kares. When else do they do this? Okay, you don't see this being done, but the Chevra Kadisha. There are all different types of Chevra Kadishas. And there are certain groups. You know, every kihila today, you know, today it's not, I really don't know what's done. Today it's probably pretty standard. You know, they go to a chapel, they just do it, or they have volunteers. Every chapel has a different minhagim, but there are still kihilas in Klal Yisrael, and they have their own chevra. I'm sure every kihila, the Hasidic kihilas, probably are likely in Breuers. There are certain kihilas, and they do things. Like, we don't know what goes on, but they do things in a very unique way. That is tradition from their kihila. And one of the things that they do, it's brought down in some kihilas, is they give the niftar malchus. They give the niftar mal, even though the person is dead. So if you're dead, what does it help giving malchus? There's no such thing in halacha. You're right. There is no such thing. There is no such thing. It's just a symbolic thing. In fact, they also do something called dalid misos bezdin. They do a symbolic type of skila, sreifa, herik, chenek. What do these things mean?
Of the Maver Yabak,
Zuchusa Yagin Aleinu. Okay, so I, from what I've read up, Baruch Hashem, I've not seen this. I don't know from this Baruch Hashem, but even though when I was in rabbinic training, they taught us that don't you dare ever take a shtela, take a job as a rabbi, unless you go and you at least watch what happens by a chevra kadisha. He says it's not. You're irresponsible as a rabbi. Even you have to know, you should be aware of exactly what happens. That's what rabbis do. Rabbis deal with these issues all the time, and you should be aware of what is done by a chevra kadisha. And there is such a thing called dalad misos bezdin. What I understand is that this is not done at all today by anyone. I remember hearing that Rav Shach, Rav Eloza Man, what's his first name? Man? What's the other name? Menach? So I remember hearing that he gave a tzava that it should be done. The Dalad Misa is Bezdin. And I remember the Chevra Kadisha said, we don't do this. We never heard of this before. And they asked the different poiskim, and they said, do not do it. He says, just because he wants it done, as I remember years ago, it's not done today. These things we don't do today, so don't look for new things that are not done. It's like I think when the Rav Dessler was nifter, he gave it tzava that there should be nothing written on his matseva, nothing, blank matseva.
Who said that?
Rav Dessler. Rav Dessler was the Talmud of Kelm, from the real Balei Musar. So I don't know who it was. It couldn't be the Chazon Ish, right? Because the Chazon Ish already died. I don't know who it was. They said, they asked him what to do. He gave it tzava that his matseva should be blank. So he said, he says that what he's saying is, that's right, that's what they did, where he came from. That was the meaning of his kihila. But there's no one alive today that can appreciate what that means. What the Musar of Kelm meant, not to have a matzeva nusach, and therefore, for who and for what? Forget it. Do what everyone else does. Just do what everyone else does. Don't stick out. You have to play the game like everyone else. That's how I remember it. Any event over here, he brings over here doing teshuvah, and he writes over this principle, V'yamr chayove krisos shalaku nifteru midei krisosan. Hare yesh loy lasois teshuvah Davar hashakul lemalkos oily kores. Now he's saying over here something very, very strange. Okay, so fasten your seatbelts. What he's saying over here, to a mishkan, correct. So he's saying over here is that look, today what should be done? A person rachmana litzlan, he did an aver for which is chayiv kores. There are different types of sins. Some sins there can be a solution. Some sins there is no solution. But he needs teshuva. First thing he should get is he should get malkos in bezdin. But there is no Beis Din today. So that's not going to happen. So what should he do? He should inflict upon his body suffering. Okay, we don't today. This is unheard of today. That's why I told you this sefer is not really very practical.
He's rolling the snow.
Exactly. Okay, so when you read these funny stories in these old books, where is it coming from? It's coming from a different world, a world that we really do not relate to. And these, if you want to see support for these principles, it's right here. Davar hashakul lemalkois oilekares. If it's the winter time, kishabah kerach banar, when the frost and the ice is in the river, imratza, if he wants to do teshuva, yishaber hakerach v'yeshev b'mayim ad piv, until his mouth ayat chotmoy, kifi sha'o shedibir imo al ho'avera, that he spoke to this woman concerning the avera, atshas gemar ho'avera. Now today he'll get pneumonia and he'll die. So he'll be guilty of committing suicide. So that's why you never heard of this today. Okay, so that's why, but in his time, I don't know, I guess people were healthier, they were stronger, they were used to, the elements. Today we're all very weak and feeble. If it's not, the air conditioning is not just perfect, if it's not 69 exactly in the summertime, you'll have a nervous breakdown. Okay, but not so long ago, who ever heard of air conditioning, okay? So in the olden days, they were tolerant of abuse. So here, a person, he was medaber with the isha, let's say for 20 minutes, so go sit in the freezing cold ice for 20 minutes, torture yourself, and say to yourself, this should be a kapara for the avera that I have done. Do this, not once, continuously. In the summertime, listen to this. Today, you'll get infections, you'll get sick, you'll die from this. But in those days, he says, go dig a pit, maggots and worms, all these disgusting creepy crawlers and spiders and all these ugly things, and sit in it. The yistaim piv oy bichli shesam hanamolim, and sit and let him close his mouth not to swallow these insects. Where the nemolim are found, v'yeloi achar kach klimayim sheyuchetz boy, and later he should clean himself, obviously not to get sick. V'mo'es ba'osin hayam she'ein kar v'chem. Let's say it's in the spring or fall where this you can't do this. Yisaneh fast. V'rak lechem u'mayim yoichal ba'erev, and in the evening don't have a feast. Eat just the bare minimum at night of bread and water. Ki beruve nemar. Look at Reuven. Let's find this support to this, a biblical support. Reuven, he was mebalbel yitzue aviv. After his mother died, after Rachel died, Reuven felt that now Yaakov should move his bed into the tent of Leah, his mother. And what did Yaakov decide? That he should move his bed into the tent of Bilhah, into the maidservant of Rachel. So Reuven was insulted. He took it as an affront to his mother. My mother is an Ikar, and Bilhah is only a maidservant. Okay, she was upgraded, obviously, to become a wife, but it wasn't the same. So he went and he took matters into his own hands, and he took the bed of his father and put the bed of his father in the tent of his wife, his mother, Leah. So the Pasuk considered this to be such a grave sin, it's as if that he lived with his mother. Okay, incest. Yishkav Reuven, what does it say? He lived with Bilhah. Not with his mother, with Bilhah. He lived with Bilhah. Okay, because he insulted what he did to Bilhah, for whatever reason, the Pasuk considers it to be a grave, the Pasuk expressed it as a very grave sin. So what did Reuven do? Reuven realized he made a big mistake. He was a little bit too quick, and what? So he did teshuva for the rest of his life. And the day when they sold Yosef as a slave, he excused himself because he took a vow, obviously, that every so often he has to conduct himself as a with teshuva. Kibiruve ne'amar sheshavu return l'saka yisakloth ulitanis and his fasting. V'yafal pisha adayin lo hoda Yehuda. Even though Yehuda, Shaddai lo hodo Yehuda, he adayin lo osa ma'isa tamar. So he's asking a very fundamental question. He learned a lot of chumash when you learn Sefer Chassidim. Where we are under the impression that the first one to do teshuva, to teach how to do teshuva, was Yehuda. Because Yehuda was nichshal in living with his daughter-in-law Tamar. When Tamar when he did not give Tamar to his third son for Yibum in marriage. Tamar was very upset, and Tamar disguised herself as a Zona and to live with Yehuda in order to have a child, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Yibum. And we have to understand the Ramban says that in the time of the Torah, Yibum could be done by anyone in the family, even the dead person's father. Person dies, he leaves over a wife with no children. How is the mitzvah of Yibum done today? The brother of the deceased has a mitzvah to marry the sister-in-law. That's it. No one else but the brother. In the time of the Torah, the Ramban says, before Matan Torah, the mitzvah of Yibum could be fulfilled by any relative, which means even the deceased's father, the father-in-law, can marry his daughter-in-law and have a child and name the child after the dead son. So Tamar was upset that her father-in-law was not giving her in marriage to the third brother, Ke'er Onon and Shelah. Shelah, he did not want to give her to Shelah because he was afraid that Shelah would die as well. So she says, if you're not going to give me the third brother to Yibam, I'll do Yibam to you. I'll make believe I'm a Zayin and I'll do Yibam to you. Now, that did not look good, obviously, for Yehuda to go do a Maisa Zinus. Okay, did not come out very, very good. And Yehuda acknowledged he made a very big mistake. And when it turned out that she was pregnant and they thought that she had a child out of wedlock, she was pregnant out of wedlock, Haitziuha v'sisoreif, let her be taken out and burnt and killed. She was a bas koyein. Or some, the Chizkuni says, Haitziu v'sisoreif does not mean that she should die. It means they would brand her. They were a woman who was a zona, in the time of the Gemara, they would brand on their forehead, zona. Okay, make a tattoo. Okay, today would be a mila, right? But in those days, it was a bizarre, they would take a... So the sea sodef means they would take a hot piece of metal and they would make a mark on her body indicating that this woman is a zona. Everyone should stay away from her. It does not necessarily mean they would kill her. Any event, she revealed, she told Yehuda, you are the hakerna. Who to whom does it belong, the Chesemes and the Psilim? And Yehuda said, Tzotka Mimeni. Yehuda taught the world that you have to do teshuva. There's something called doing teshuva, to confess. So we get the impression that the first one to confess was Yehuda. But the mice of Yehuda took place later than the story of Reuven. And we find Reuven already confessed his sin and behaved in the way of doing teshuvah long before Yehuda. So therefore he's asking a very fundamental question. How come Chazal give credit to Yehuda? Yeah.
What about the Boaz?
Much later.
Yeah, it's much later, but that was after we got the Torah. So he should have been allowed.
No, Boaz was not Yibam. Boaz has, even though it uses the words Boaz, people make this mistake all the time. Boaz and Ruth have absolutely nothing to do with Yibum. There was no Maisa Yibum in the story of Ruth. Ruth's husband died. Ruth, Machloin and Kilyoin, they died without children. Did they die without children? I'm assuming they did. That doesn't even say if they died without children. I'm assuming they did. But it was not a Maisa. The only one that could do Yibum would be the brothers of Machloin and Kilyoin. Right. And there were no brothers that we know about. So there was no mitzvah of Yibum. It's over. There's nothing to do with a halachic din of Yibum. Boaz was a distant relative. He was a cousin, an uncle. I don't even know the... Well, there was another halacha in the Torah that geula, that you have an obligation to redeem if a person, a relative, has a steachuza, ancestral plot of land. There is an obligation for the closest relative to redeem that land and return it to the estate. There's a separate halacha of purchasing possession. Now, it appears that there was a custom... It's not a halacha, that the person who is Mekayim, the mitzvah of Geula, also has first rights to marry the Almana. Okay, but it was not a matter of the mitzvah of Yibum. It was not Yibum, it was just a matter of redeeming land. And the custom was, the person who redeems the land for the Almana, it was expected that he should marry her. Okay, today we look at marriage as this glorious thing. You know, it's like Hollywood. But that's not the way marriage was in the time of the Torah. There were many situations, not to say there is, of course there's love and there's hate in marriage. But in the time of the Torah, there were a lot of factors that went into marriage that surprise us. A woman without being married was a vulnerable member of society. Who's going to take care of? Who's going to support her?
This would be apparent, the married woman, like he's been 6 years old.
Exactly. Look, it says Shimon ben Shetach, he married 300 women to feed them truma in the years of famine. There was a year of famine. There was no food available. The only thing available was truma. A woman, a Yisraelis, is not allowed to eat truma. There's the chi of misa bidei shamayim for a zar to eat truma. For a Yisrael to eat truma, there's the chi of misa bidei shamayim. Shimon ben Shetach married 300 women to make them into an eshes koyin so they can eat truma. Well, so do you think that he lived with them? I don't think so. It doesn't sound like it. It was just an arrangement, a halachic arrangement, in order to allow them to eat truma. Shlomo HaMelech, he married 1,000 women. Does it really mean that he lived with them, 1,000 women? It's not likely. It's very, very... What? It's very unlikely. These are a political marriage. Okay? Whatever it means, not so clear whatever it means. So here as well, going back, so here we have a question. That's a halacha. David is only allowed to marry 18 wives. A king is only allowed to marry 18 wives. So he's saying here, he's not even coming to answer the question. He's saying over here, you have over here an incredible incident, is that the principle of a person doing teshuva and bringing upon himself suffering to volunteer that he should suffer in order to atone for his averos is a principle that goes back from time immemorial all the way back to Reuven, even before the principle of teshuva was invented by Yehuda. So therefore, it's not a surprise that the Rabbi Yehuda Chost is telling a person that if a Rachmanel Litzlan, he did an Avera, the solution is he should bring upon himself affliction. He should go to the mikvah in the ice. Should be freezing cold. He should do all these bizarre things to cause himself discomfort in order to atone for an Avera. At least he does it, or at least he does the fast. Accept upon yourself a voluntary fast, and when the fast is over, don't go out to the restaurant for a delicious meal. When the fast is over, you go home and you take out some stale bread and some lukewarm water to break your fast. That is a real form of teshuva for an avera. So this is something which I think today is foreign to us. Today, no, you don't hear about this today. In the 21st century, I've never heard anyone giving any rabbanim giving people advice. The advice is, Rachman Litzan, a person is an avera, and they're really sad, if you have such a thing, and they go to a rav, you know what they tell them? Just forget about it, and don't do it again. And just go weiter. Just protect yourself, erect safeguards, that this avera should not happen again, and just get it out of your head and forget about it. That's all that's expected of us today. But not that long ago, people had these type of ideas, which are very noble, is to bring upon themselves physical affliction to be atoned for averos. Now, in the parentheses, he writes, why over here did he give an example of water? Amar b'medrash, kuf lamid shanim hay adam harishon. This is a very, very bizarre medrash. Adam harishon immersed in water for 130 years. Adam was poyrish. Adam Harishon, that's a very famous Chazal. Adam Harishon, he separated himself from, he had a fight with Chava. He did tshuva, also did tshuva. And Cain did tshuva. Cain also did tshuva, killing Hevel. Okay, but this the other Chazal is more famous. More famous Chazal is Adam Harishon got into a fight with his wife because she was the one who caused them to be nichshol. So, and they were separated. Okay, the first couple to be separated, not divorced. It doesn't say anywhere that Adam got divorced. Well, it doesn't say they got married either.
What? No one else was around to marry.
No one else around to marry. Maybe he can marry his daughter, his granddaughter, his great granddaughter. What? She needed. It says that was she. They was born with Cain and Hevel girls, twins, and obviously we don't know all the details. But obviously, if we're here today, there must have been more people around there at that point in time. And we all come from Shais. We come from Shais and from Nama. Nama is the only carryover from Cain. Hevel is gone. Hevel is kaput. Okay? Hashem created Adam and Chava. Adam and Chava had originally two children, Cain and Hevel. Cain murdered Hevel. So Hevel is arois, he's gone. Who survived? Cain. Cain married his sister, two sisters, married two women. He was married to two wives. And he had a whole number of descendants. And all of those descendants came to an end at the time of the Mabul with one exception. There was only one survivor of Cain's line that survived after the Mabul. And that is Noach's wife. Noach was married to Nama. Nama was a descendant of Cain. And she went into the Teva. They had three children, Shem, Cham, and Yefes. And Noach comes from who? Shais. After Adam was reunited with his wife, after being separated for 120 years, they came back together. Okay, they went to a good marriage counselor, and they made peace between them, and they got back together, and they had a new child. They named the child Shais. I wonder if the marriage counselor was called Shais. You know why? Because it's a very beautiful medrash that says that when Aaron HaKoyen died. How many parashas ago was that? Was it last week or 2 weeks ago? It was Chukas. It was last Bala 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, we learned about the death of Aaron. So it says in the Medrash that when Aaron died, who walked behind his? Well, he died in Hor HaHor. But who accompanied him to his death? It says, I think it says there 80,000 children. I think it says in the Medrash, and every one of the 80,000 children. Guess what their name was? Aaron. Why were there 80,000 children who had a name called Aaron? So the Medrash says there were 80,000 couples who did not like each other and wanted to get divorced. Okay, Klal Yisrael, there were 3 million people. There were 600,000, make a cheshbon of how many unhappy marriages are there. There were 600,000 men over the age of 20. From the 600,000, it seems, 80,000 of them did not like their wives. Okay?
No, you're
counting children here. No, let me explain what happened. The 600,000 men married to 600,000 women. And from those 600,000, it would appear 80,000 couples did not get along and went for marriage counseling. Really? And who was the marriage counselor?
Aaron HaKohen.
And Aaron HaKohen was able to reconcile, was able to make peace between man and wife for these 80,000 unhappy married couples to prevent them from going to divorce courts. When they got back together, they were so happy, they had another child. And they named the baby Aaron. They named the baby boy. Okay, what a good, I don't know, good kash, I don't know. This is the Medrash. They got back together, they had a baby because he reconciled their marriage. And they had a baby, and they named the baby after their marriage counselor. I ask you, how many people have you ever heard of named a child in honor of their marriage counselor? And never, ever heard of such a thing. What?
It's
the Rebbe, the marriage counselor? They named him after Aaron in recognition of thank you for saving their marriage. these 80,000 couples who had 80,000 children by the name of Aaron, they all marched in front or behind. I don't know exactly at what point in time, because Aaron seemingly died privately, but at some point in time in Aaron's Petira, these 80,000 boys marched to give kavod to Aaron HaKoyen, Oyev Shalom, the Roidev Shalom. So here, going back to our discussion, Adam HaRishon was separated from his wife for 120 years, Chazal say. And that's not healthy. For a healthy man to be separated from a woman for 120 years is not a good thing. And what happened because he was separated? He was moitzi, and I'm not sure I'm saying the right words, but I think from memory, if he's not with his wife, it's a very big nisayin for a healthy male not to be married. It's a very big nisayin, and that can lead to being moitzi zera levatola. And when a person is moitzi zera levatola, especially an exalted person on the level of Adam HaRishon, it creates with it koichos of ra, demons, shadim, all different types of forces of impurity. All of the things we learn in the Gemara about the shadim and these monsters and these forces of ra, do you know when they were created? They were not created by Shemayim. They were created by Adam HaRishon during the 130 years that he was without a woman. He was without a wife. And that created by him a very big nisayon, very unhealthy situation, which forced him to whatever that these things mean. And in the process of whatever these things mean, it created with it things that were very damaging to the world, which lingered on ad hayoyim hazeh. And that was during the 130 years. So it appears that this medrash appears to be a complement. What's the word? It appears to be it appears to dovetail. So what do you do when you're out of control? I don't mean this in a bad way. You take a cold shower. Correct? When a person is in heated, a technique to control yourself is, go take a cold shower. Calm down. What do you think he was doing for 130 years in the water? Because since Adam got into a disagreement with his wife and now was not on speaking terms with her for 130 years because of the fight of what happened, the consequence of the Eitz Hadas, he had big tainus on her. You went and you convinced me to eat from the Eitz Hadas. And that resulted in death. That resulted in us being driven out. The government foreclosed on our home. We lived in Gan Eden, a palace in Gan Eden. And what happened? We were evicted from Gan Eden because of you, Chava. So it was not very pleasant. There was no shalom bias, to say the least. They were separated. That created another problem. Who is he going to marry, Adam? There's no one to marry. It created demons. And in the process of trying to deal with his very difficult situation of being without a wife, he immersed himself in cold water. In cold water for those 130 years. So that's what he says over here. Bava Kama? Where do you have citation? Oh, with Toysus. Toysus Dibra Masl Mi. Toysus. On that daf. Daf Tzadi Bava Kama, with Toysus Dibra Hamaschil. On that daf, Mi, that's Adam was in the water for 130 years. Mechaper Shnigzag Zelders. Okay, next halacha. The Oit.
Adam was a very great sonic.
What? Adam is the Yitzir Kapa of Shalari Bodhi Shalayla. I mean, Who are we to say? Adam is Adam. I mean, this is the greatest of the good. We have a clue. He's buried in the Maris Machpelah. I mean, look, the truth is, there's a machlokes. There's a fellow, there's an amazing essay. If I'm not mistaken, it was written by a very choshev Talmud Chacham in Cleveland. His name is Eisenstadt. He wrote at least two volumes on Chumash in English. His wife is a very, very, very famous teacher, a principal in Cleveland. And her husband, he wrote this book, and he wrote here an essay which always made an impression on me, where he cites a medrash. And the medrash, he basically he elaborates on this medrash to show that there is a machlekes in among the Tanoim. If we were to go back in a time machine and watch Adam HaRishon and view Adam HaRishon in Maase Bereishis, what would we find? So one medrash seems to say you would not be able even to see anything because you would be burnt by his holiness. He was a Malach Elokim Tzavakos. Beyond anything you can possibly imagine, you couldn't get near, you would be burnt to a crisp coming near the holiness of this person, what was going on in Gan Eden with Chava v'chula v'chula. And the other Medrash goes to the extreme opposite. He was almost like an animal. He was a barbarian. He was the simplest element of life form you can possibly imagine. And if we would be taken back in the time machine, it would make the Flintstones look like
How could you say that?
That's what says the Medrash. That's what it says in the Medrash. I'm not making this up.
I don't understand that at all.
Mamish the Torah is describing Adam HaRishon. What was Adam HaRishon? What was the story? Who was this man, Adam HaRishon? Was he a Malach Elokim Tzavakos that if we would come within 100 miles, we would be burnt to a crisp because of the holiness? Well, that's one opinion. And the other opinion, it's an incredible insight, goes to the extreme opposite. You can come to Adam HaRishon, you can pat him on the back, you can touch him, you would look at him, you would be blown away by how simple, elementary, barbaric. This was the beginning of creation. The beginning of creation, Hashem created a man. And that man, Hashem gave him free will. And the free will was in its rawest state of humanity. It was Adam was not a complex person. He was the simplest of the simplest. And from that developed, when Adam expressed his free will, Hashem reciprocated. And Hashem gave him a little bit of spirituality. A little more. Then came all the generations, Noach, Avram, until Klal Yisrael. Matan Torah, Hashem came down, Har Sinai, and we have a person like Moshe Rabbeinu who went to Shemayim. It's a process. So who's right? The extremes here are so great. I don't think you have any medrash where you have such a the spectrum is so rochoik mimizroch lemarif. This essay, I have to find this essay. This essay from Einstein, it's an amazing. I remember when I showed someone was so disturbed and blown away by it. I actually showed it to him in writing. I made a photocopy.
And yet they both could be right.
Exactly.
In the process of development.
Exactly. Right. So, but what does it mean they can both be right? That's a very hard thing to understand. We don't understand this. It's a conceptual. It's an idea, which is really, really very hard to swallow. How do you teach children? When you teach children, what do you tell them? What does the average child think about Adam HaRishon? I don't know. What did you think? When you were a child, they taught you the story of Adam HaRishon. Did you really appreciate this principle that Adam HaRishon was a spiritual being? He was the Yitzir, he was the handiwork of Hashem. He was a lofty creature. I don't think so.
Kind of a naive...
You always superimpose yourself upon the subject. Adam is just like me. So the way I think he thought, that's natural. You superimpose your level of humanity upon the subject that you are describing. Look, it's not for nothing. In every generation, I went to an exhibit. It's a fascinating exhibit. Bahavdil Elif Alfi Abdullah. It's about Yashka. And this exhibit, they show portraits of Yashka. The purpose of the exhibit was to show that every single generation, they take themselves
and they superimpose themselves into the portrait that they create for Yashka.
Like you have a woman that we
have. They have like the famous, every generation is a certain, there are certain like famous portraits by the very big artists depicting what Yashka looked like. And the exhibit showed, they're really just showing what they look like.
Yeah.
They're taking their own generation, they're taking their times, and they're using that. We don't do that. Moshe Rabbeinu, there's no portrait of Moshe Rabbeinu in Orthodox circles. You go on these books, you'll find portraits of them, whatever. But then you go watch the movie. You know, you can watch the movie. Okay, Moses. You can go see the Ten Commandments. Okay, they're probably better movies. The later movies aren't so good. You know, the Moses and the old movies are much better.
Yeah.
But we don't, in Orthodox circles, we don't do this. You don't have any because we give up. We know you can't fathom. You can't fathom. We really don't know. We really have no clue. And it's by design. It's probably by design of the imagination is stronger than reality. Okay, leave something for the imagination. Okay, that the imagination creates a world of reality that is so much more powerful than reality itself. Isn't that true? The way you imagine something creates a life force that when you have a picture, when you have something concrete, it diminishes it.
The Lehman Haggadah, which was the illustrations were the illustrator was from England, so he shows pictures of the
English.
Pictures of the pyramid, but the background is all England.
Exactly.
The architecture is English.
Exactly.
And the pyramids are
Egyptian.
Are Egyptian. It's like what was this guy thinking?
Exactly. Let's just this last paragraph here. The oid gufay nischamim ba'avera yiskarer v'yisane ad sheyuchal leshe b'mayim be'eis kerach. A person's guf becomes. They're just saying if a person now has a taiva, they take a cold shower. He's just giving a person practical advice. A person has a taiva do an avera yiskarer v'yisane. A person should cool himself off. V'yisane should fast ad sheyuchal leshe b'mayim. In water, be'ez kerach, oikishyesh nimolim, udvoirim, bees, be'ezachama, yeshevim nimolim, be'yikshar, piv, be'beged. You should seal your mouth in a garment. What does that mean exactly? I'm not exactly sure what it means. V'gam nechirov, and your teeth, pen, yikonsubo, that don't let the ints, don't swallow the insects. Okay, that's an avera. If you have to go and immerse yourself into a pit of bees and insects in order to train yourself not to do an avera, just make sure you don't get sick or make sure you don't swallow the insects. So he's telling you that this technique is not just good for teshuvah, it's good preventive medicine. Okay, as we said, it's not very practical for us, but at least it's something to reflect upon. We'll take a short break. I want to learn some other inyanim about Tisha B'Av and about the 3 weeks. So very interesting. I want to discuss with you, and I want you to tell me your answer to some of the issues that we're going to discuss. We'll see you in a second.